Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 38 for Friday, April 10, 2009. I'm putting this week's episode together tonight at home in downtown Denver just before we leave tomorrow for a quick weekend trip to visit my wife's brother and sister in Omaha, Nebraska. This week's interview is with Charles Wright, who you might think of as the Denver Post's virtual paperboy. He makes sure the newspaper's content gets uploaded very early each morning for delivery to approximately 500 Kindle subscribers. Whether or not Charlie is your paperboy, I think you're going to enjoy this behind-the-scenes look at what goes into making a Kindle newspaper subscription look so easy. In Kindle news, this week saw a well-organized street protest in New York City on behalf of the Kindle's text-to-speech feature, and a quieter protest is gotten going on the issue of the $9.99 price point. So it felt like kind of a week back in the 60s with all the protests going on involving the Kindle. This week's tech tip is courtesy of a listener, Larry, in Bay City, Oregon, who sent me a way to tag content on the Kindle. It's quite involved, but really artfully done, and I'll walk you through that. The Kindle quote is a heartwarming story from the Denver Post. I will have comments from Esmeralda de Trafford, Mary McManus, Greg Vans, Susie Burnett, COVID Goyal, Dolores Martin, and Dorothy Witter. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes or Zune stores or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to this week's Kindle news. Well, it did sound a little bit like the 60s this week, especially on Tuesday, when Reading Rights, a coalition of 30 disability groups formed by the National Federation of the Blind, held a rowdy protest outside the New York City office of the Authors Guild. The coalition made very effective use of social media tools, including this live audio feed that enabled me to listen to the sounds of the protest 2,000 miles away. Let's listen in on some of the activity there in front of the Authors Guild office that was up on the seventh floor, apparently, looking down on this.
You listen to the Reading Rights Coalition broadcast here live from New York City in front of the Authors Guild on 32nd Street in New York City. Several hundred folks with disabilities are lined up on this sidewalk.
Twitter was full of tweets supporting the protest as it unfolded, and nary a word came from the beleaguered Authors Guild, whose pressure had led Amazon to back away from text-to-speech on the Kindle 2. It wasn't until after the protest ended that a lengthy official statement appeared at authorsguild.org. It contained such dubious recommendations as encouraging Amazon and other ebook manufacturers to add a Braille keyboard to their devices, and it concluded with a tone-deaf statement that, quote, "today's protest is unfortunate and unnecessary." That led blogger Abraham Lloyd to state, quote, "the Guild is messaging like it's 1975, when there were enough media outlets that you could put a story or statement out for newspapers, radio, and TV, and that was the truth." Meanwhile, a readingrights.org's petition protesting the threatened removal of text-to-speech from the Kindle 2 tonight is up to 4,785 signatures, nearly half of the way to its goal of 10,000 signatures. Publishers Weekly, in covering the events, reported 200 people participating and reported they were carrying signs reading, "Don't disable the Kindle and give Kindle the freedom of speech." Chris Danielson, who's director of communications for the National Federation of the Blind, said the group brought two busloads of people from Baltimore, where the federation is based. We're actually going to have a chance to hear more from him next week because I have an interview scheduled with Mr. Danielson on Monday afternoon for next week's podcast. You know, I almost feel sorry for the Authors Guild, and I suspect that if I took the time to untangle all the intricate legal arguments being made for and against their position on text-to-speech, I'd end up seeing that authors do have a case to make against how Amazon handled its introduction of text-to-speech on the Kindle 2. This was the point that Jonathan Zittrain suggested in my interview with him at South by Southwest. But really, you know, the opposition to Texas speech has been handled in the worst possible way by the Authors Guild, with arrogance and reliance on really old PR tools in the face of a twittering, blogging, live media mob that really seems to have just gotten the best of them. And unless the Authors Guild responds with more than a call for Braille keyboards, the beat is definitely going to go on. The Reading Rights Coalition's next event will be a protest April 25th and 26th at the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books. So another Kindle protest that so far has yet to hit the streets involves Amazon's $9.99 price point that it has said it's committed to for New York Times bestsellers and new releases. Listener G. Hussein Chinoy of Fort Collins sent me a link to an April 6 Wired story, cutely headlined, "Kindle Readers Ignite Protest Over Ebook Prices." Wired noted that some 250 Kindle readers are using Amazon's own book tagging system to mark ebooks priced more than $10 with a tag that reads 9/99 boycott. As of tonight, nearly 1,000 books have earned the tag. And I also note that some of them may have already responded to the pressure because they have prices lower than $9.99. That includes Long Lost by Harlan Coben, number one on the list with 118 tags, now selling for, you guessed it, $9.99. The tagging protest was organized by A. Hoy on Amazon's discussion boards. She concluded her opening manifesto with a sort of inflammatory language that can kindle a conflagration. She wrote, "We did not buy our Kindles with the promise of convenience and low prices in order to be swindled with this kind of bait-and-switch tactics." Then comes 81 replies to her original post, mostly supportive, although I didn't see evidence that the pricing problem at this point is really diminishing loyalty to the Kindle. "I agree with you," wrote Michelle Laracy Andre. "In addition, the sloppy editing is an affront to the readers. $9.99 is really quite a bit when you think of how cheaply you can download music to your iPod. In spite of this, I do love my Kindle." Well, me too. I think that the $9.99 price point is a reasonable standard to maintain, but if I protest it, it's more likely just to be to avoid paying more than $9.99 for any new Kindle release. And I don't see this one hitting the streets. I mean, where would they go? I'd have to find out the headquarters of Random House and some of the other publishers, and I just don't see it happening. You know, and the issues for the people with disabilities are really serious. I mean, they had some fun with this protest, but the idea that they're being denied the chance to read all of the books in the Kindle store and on the Kindle really has got people infuriated enough to get on buses and go cause some trouble. And obviously, as my cousin who's blind pointed out to me, the Kindle has still got some drawbacks because you can't actually navigate it if you can't see the controls on the screen. But it certainly is holding out an exciting promise of content for people with visual disabilities. Time now for this week's tech tip. Larry, a listener in Bay City, Oregon, sent me an audio file with a tech tip which I've tested and I'm very impressed with. By way of context, he wrote me the following email. "A few days ago, someone posted a question in Amazon's Kindle forum. He had saved many clippings and now was dismayed to find that they were not organized in any way, shape, or fashion. He wondered, in so many words, how he was supposed to use these clippings when they were all scattered randomly through the My Clippings file. This started me thinking about a possible solution to that problem, and it finally dawned on me that one could effectively tag one's clippings by creating a note with a tag just prior to saving the clipping. Now, in my own case, I can see using Larry's tech tip to tag material that I'm reading on my Kindle that relates to, say, Amazon, so I can find articles and highlighted sections that I tag Amazon all in one place for use in preparing the podcast. I might also use this system to tag content that I find inspirational, so I can gather all of the inspiring bits in one place when I need a lift. So the example Larry uses is the economy. And here he is explaining how it works.
Let's say you've just read an article on your Kindle about the economy, and you're about to save that article as a clipping. Wait. Before you save that clipping, you're going to create and save a tag. Quickly, here's how to create a tag. First, decide what subject or subjects, there may be multiple subjects, you want this clipping organized under. Now, if you haven't already invented tags for these subjects, you need to create in your mind the tags that are meaningful to you, but aren't real words that a search would find in any other document. For example, for the subject economics, you might create the tag Q economics, no spaces. Prefixing a word with a Q will transform that ordinary word into something unique, which the Kindle search engine isn't going to find anywhere you didn't put it. That's important. It's also important to be consistent. You must always use the same tag for the same subject because it's that tag that's going to make it possible to group your clippings by subject later on when you go looking for them. If you think you might forget this tag, write it down or create a special note somewhere that has your list of tags. Now that you have a tag or tags in mind for the clipping you're about to use, about to save, create a note. On the K2, just bump the 5 way up so that you get a cursor in the text field and start typing. On the K1, roll the indicator up the screen a little and click, then select Add Note. Type your tag or tags. In the example, you would type Q economics without any spaces. Also, you might want to add a word or two or three of identifying information so that later you can distinguish this clipping from others in the same topic. Then save your note. That note is your tag. Now, immediately make your clipping. You've just saved a tagged clipping, one that will be easy to access with a search on one of the tags you've tagged it with. Here's how that works. Let's say that you've been saving clippings on various topics, and now you want to get a list of all of your clippings on the subject of economics. Simply search on your economics tag. In our example, that would be Q economics. Assuming that your Kindle isn't working on building its search index, you'll get a list of items that have notes that have the word Q economics in it. The item at the top of the list will most likely be My Clippings. This is because the items are sorted by relevance, and this tag will likely appear in more places in My Clippings than in any other document. So now you're going to click on My Clippings. When you do that, you'll see a list of all the locations in My Clippings that contain your economics tag. All of your economics clippings are now easily accessible together in one list of links. If you had added a few extra identifying words when you created your notes, you should be able to see those words, and that will help you select the specific individual economics clipping you might be looking for. Now, select the location associated with the note you're looking for, and voila, there's your clipping immediately following your tagged note. The reason this works is because the My Clippings file is simply a sequential log of all your activity, notes, clippings, highlights, and bookmarks. The Kindle put them all in the same place, in the same order you created them, so the clipping you saved immediately after creating the tag note is there in the My Clippings file immediately following that note. Len, I hope this is useful. I'm eagerly awaiting your next podcast. Bye-bye.
Larry, I want to thank you for taking the time to prepare such a clear explanation of your tagging system. As I said, I've just tried it and it does work flawlessly. I also like that I can use it to tag entire news articles or just a highlighted passage from any content on my Kindle. One thing I'm curious about is how I could easily print out all of the items that I've tagged on my Kindle on a certain topic. After searching on Q Economy or another tag, they show up all together in my clippings on the Kindle using Larry's method. But when I connect my Kindle to the computer and open the text file My Clippings in the Documents folder, I seem to lose the ability to bring all of the Q Economy or other tagged items together in a single view. The tag would enable me to find the items quickly in the text file on my computer, but I'd have to copy and paste them into a separate word processing document for a printout on that topic, it seems to me. So if you can think of a speedy way to take Larry's tagging process all the way to printing, I'd love to hear about it and could perhaps add it into a future tech tip on the podcast. Thanks again, Larry. I was able to do this week's interview in person by taking a quick ride on the 16th Street Free Mall shuttle down to the offices of the Denver Newspaper Agency. The agency serves the Denver Post, which is one of the 34 newspapers now available for subscription on the Kindle. The Post ranks a respectable 18th in bestseller status in that list, ahead of such competitors as the San Jose Mercury News, the Baltimore Sun, and the Shanghai Daily. I signed up for the Post Kindle edition on the day that its longtime rival here in Denver, the Rocky Mountain News, published its last edition, and I very much enjoyed the virtual subscription to my local newspaper. I'll let my guest this week introduce himself in his own words.
Charles Wright, I'm systems editor for the Denver Newspaper Agency.
And part of that involves the Kindle.
Oh, yeah. I transfer the files to the Kindle every night.
How complicated was it to set it up at first to get it so that your files would be ready to go to the Kindle?
Actually, this transfer system was quick and dirty because our old one wasn't that reliable. And when the agency took it over, we wanted to get something up and running that was more reliable than in the past. So this was fairly easy. Basically, all I'm doing is taking the stories that we send to online and converting them into an XML format for Kindle.
And you don't have to do anything changing headlines or playing around with any of the type that actually appears on the Kindle?
Not to a great extent.
Mm-hmm. Are there any photos in the Denver Post feed now?
Not yet. I'm working on that right now.
How soon do you think that might be added?
By the end of this week, I hope. It depends upon a lot upon Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, they may want to test for a few weeks. That's what they did with this new feed. We tested it for almost 2 months before they put it on.
Oh, so they were sort of actually trying it out with readers? Were they like beta testers or?
I assume so. I don't know how they tested, but we were actually feeding them for about 2 months before they started putting this feed on Kindle.
Yeah, and this is, I think I remember, it was earlier this year, like in January or so? Or
late December is when this feed went live on Kindle.
Now, I remember there was one day when I got a message that said your Denver Post isn't available, and you probably remember that day pretty well.
Very well. What happened was that the machine on which the program ran got an automatic Windows update. It tried to reboot itself, didn't come all the way back up. I normally check it from home by remote desktoping into it, but since it hadn't booted, I couldn't do that, so it wasn't until I could get downtown that I could actually check it. So, yeah, we were late that one day. The machine no longer does automatic updates.
That was fixed.
It downloads them, and then I install them.
Each night, when does the transfer actually take place from your end?
2:30 a.m. That's about the earliest we can do it and then still reliably get content from the paper.
It's not only the Kindle that the paper goes out to. You said there's some other formats. What are some of the other ways that people can read the Denver Post other than just on paper?
Well, of course, we have the electronic library that's been available for some time.
What's that?
What colloquially was called the morgue.
That's where you used to go to get information to do obits.
Oh, yeah. That has been online for quite some time. You'd have to check with the library folks on access to it. We also feed the National Federation for the Blind, and we do have our online service. So in addition to the printed newspaper, we also have four different electronic forms that we do.
Do you think people here at the Post, like in the newsroom, are aware that there's a Kindle edition?
I don't think so. We've tried to impress upon them that, you know, the electronic publishing is becoming more and more important, but we have a lot of newspaper attitude to contend with.
Do they even resist the online version?
Some of the statements I have heard, yeah, there is some resentment to it, but I think they're accepting it.
Yeah. Now, the difference with the Kindle is that people are actually paying to subscribe, so when that's actually some revenue coming in.
Yeah, and I understand that for the Auto Bureau of Circulations, the Kindle is considered a paid subscription.
And that's important because your circulation determines to some extent the ad rates.
That determines our ad rate, exactly.
Do you think the Kindle will save the Denver Post?
By itself? No. But put together with everything else, yeah, I think the Denver Post will make it.
Are there any other platforms like the Kindle that you all are working with to try to have alternate ways for people to read the paper?
Not that we're working with right now, but I've been keeping an eye on some. The Reader, for example, that the New York Times has been experimenting with looks pretty interesting. Ideally, when we come down to something that is about news or page size 8.5 by 11, that has decent resolution for photos, that's going to be ideal. One of the guys that I used to work with said that when it gets down to the point where you can throw it away at the end of the day, that's where we want it to be.
Yeah, because that's a real advantage of the current paper.
Exactly. You can line the birdcage with it.
There won't be anybody doing that with a $359 Kindle.
No, unless you're Bill Gates, of course.
That's right. Have you had a chance to read the post on the Kindle?
I have seen it, yeah, several times. I took it with me to and from work, read it on the train for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. We only have one Kindle in-house, so we have to share it.
Yeah. What was your sense of reading it just when you were trying it like that? Did you like reading on that screen or not?
It was comfortable. I had no problems with it. Maneuvering could be a little easier, but I think with the Kindle, too, it's better than it used to be.
You're about to retire, so you've had a long career in the newspaper business. Tell me where you started and what some of the things are that you've done leading up to your role with the Kindle here.
Oh, boy. Well, I started a copy editor in 1964 at the Fresno Bee. Fresno, California. Became a reporter and later an editor, science writer, editor. Then when newspapers started moving into computers, I went back to school, studied computers there, and in around 1980 became systems editor at the Bee. I've been working at it ever since.
How did you make that switch from reporting into more of the systems side? What led you to do that?
It was probably a natural transition. I've been a licensed amateur radio operator for 50 years, and I've always been an experimenter, you know, trying new things. I used to build my own equipment, so it was a natural transition.
And you were covering science was your beat for a while?
Yeah.
What types of things were you covering as a beat reporter in science?
Well, when it was mostly a medical beat at the time. There was very little technology.
So you're pretty sure the Post is going to make it. I mean, it must have been like feeling the bullet go by the head to watch the Rocky go down.
Yeah, sort of.
Although they were your competitors, was there any, there must have been some mixed feelings, I guess.
I can't say they were competitors because I work for the Denver Newspaper Agency.
Oh, I see. So you work for both.
Right.
Yeah. Why did the Rocky fail and the Post didn't?
You don't want me to answer that.
Okay. All right. But you are confident that the Post will continue, and partly because you think that they will take advantage of platforms like the Kindle in time to have new revenue flow to the operation?
I hope so.
Well, anything else that's interesting about the Kindle? You've got a unique perspective watching it from here in the IT department of a newspaper that's using it. But what are your other thoughts about the Kindle?
It can only get better. We're seeing the beginning of this type of technology right now, and things can only improve.
Do you have any other plans in addition to adding photographs for how you'd like to see the Post Kindle version improve?
First of all, photographs. We're working on that. I hope that's available soon.
Yeah. But organizing into sections. Did you get to decide how to structure the sections that appear on the Kindle?
Basically, I'm not done with that yet. I've got a new delivery system that I've been working on that will allow me to sort it by section, by page, by position on the page. For example, right now, I kind of process it more or less in the order in which I get it.
Oh.
But the new delivery system will allow me to sort it.
Will there ever be a chance for people to subscribe just to the sports edition of the post on the Kindle, so it's more targeted by content?
That'll be up to the post and Amazon.
I want to thank Charlie Wright for taking time out of his really busy schedule to talk to me this week for the interview. And if you live in Denver or you have any Denver connections, I'd urge you to try a 14-day trial of the Denver Post on your Kindle. And at $5.99 a month, I think it's a pretty good bargain, well-priced for one of the really great newspapers in the country. Definitely a newspaper worth saving. Well, I love my Kindle subscriptions to the Financial Times and the Washington Post, but if I didn't subscribe to the Denver Post on Kindle, I'd miss a story like this one in today's opinion section. The headline is, "Angels Take the Form of Wyoming Snowplow Drivers." It's short and sweet, so I'll read you the whole article. A Wyoming man trying to get to a Colorado hospital for a liver transplant needed a miracle. A blizzard had closed the roads on Saturday afternoon, and he still had about 175 miles to go before he could get to the University of Colorado Hospital on Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora. His miracle came in the form of a convoy of Wyoming Department of Transportation snowplows that gave him a personal escort to the state line in whiteout conditions. Chuck Forbes got his transplant, and the YDOT snowplow drivers and the folks at the Wyoming Highway Patrol deserve a round of applause for a good deed well done. Forbes and his wife, Ruth, spoke to reporters Wednesday from the hospital in Aurora and thanked those who gave Forbes, 59, a second lease on life. Ruth Forbes talked about getting to the Colorado border, where conditions weren't quite as bad, but having just barely enough gas to reach the next filling station. The trip, which ended with the couple reaching the hospital at 9:30 p.m., was a journey fueled by gumption and the kindness of strangers. At a time when the news is dominated by bad economic reports and divisive politics, it's heartening to hear a story that reinforces our belief in the better angels of our nature. We wish Chuck Forbes the best in his recovery, and to the Wyoming public servants who extended a helping hand to a couple in need, a tip of the hat. You've done your state proud. That's the Kindle quote this week from today's Denver Post. Time now for comments. Esmeralda DeTrafford emailed me the following. I was shopping for my Kindle and I came across two books I have been looking forward to having for some time. These books were written by prominent writers and should be or will be on the bestsellers list. The release date on both books is less than 2 months ago, so I figured I would pay $9.99 for each book. I was wrong. The Eighth Confession by James Patterson is $15.39. Long Lost by Harlan Coben is $11.99. I have contacted Amazon before about the price issue and did it again, but I got an answer that did not explain the price difference. Basically, they said they will keep the price at $9.99 whenever possible. The author or his publisher will be the deciding factor in setting the price. I will not purchase either book until the price comes down. If people who own a Kindle refuse to pay more than $9.99, the authors could not charge more than that price. Thanks again for your podcast, Esmeralda DeTrafford. Esmeralda, you and others who tagged Harlan Coben's book with the $9.99 boycott tag seem to have succeeded in lowering the price because, as I noted in the news item, this book is now listed at $9.99. I noticed that others have joined the tagging movement for this book and adding their own variations. In addition to the 119 people who tagged it $9.99 boycott, there were 38 who tagged it, quote, outrageous Kindle price, 23 tagged it overpriced, and 15 tagged it simply too expensive. Maybe this tagging business is working after all. Mary McManus emailed, Len, you mentioned on the podcast of April 3rd a Kindle book being released for $15 plus, which should have been $9.99. there is an even more insidious thing happening with Kindle book prices. Namely, something may be released at $9.99, but then its price may jump. I can give you two specific examples. Wally Lamb's The Hour I First Believed was released at $9.99, but even while it was on the New York Times bestseller list, it shot up to $16.17 in the Kindle store. It held this price for several weeks and then dropped back to $9.99. Charles Todd's A Matter of Justice, released in December at $9.99 and is now $14.84. I keep a list of Kindle books that I might wish to purchase, which is how I happen to be aware of these, Mary continues. This often puts me in a quandary. Do I grab any book that I might want in the future upon its $9.99 release, or do I risk waiting and having the price go up? On the other hand, many release at the higher price and then drop to $9.99, but sometimes they don't drop. The Condition by Jennifer Hay was published in July of 2008 and stubbornly remains at $14.29. Although I would prefer to read all of them on the Kindle, this is what keeps me using my local public library in addition to it, Mary McManus. Greg Van of Cumming, Georgia, responded to my request for evidence that it's worth clicking on the Tell the Publisher, I Like to Read This Book on Kindle button. Greg emailed, quote, I requested Herman Wouk's Winds of War about 3 months ago. I noticed yesterday it is now available for the Kindle. It will be the next thing I read. Well, I hope Greg really was able to buy Winds of War for his Kindle, because tonight when I did a search in the Kindle store, that title didn't show up except for a print edition that had the Tell the Publisher I'd Like to Read This Book on the Kindle button available. Well, Wouk's books, The Glory, This Is My God, and A Hole in Texas are available for Kindle, but for tonight at least, The Winds of War isn't. So that's pretty odd. Susie Burnett on the show notes page noted that she receives more New Yorker content on her digital subscription than she does with the Caliber program using the free RSS feed. In a way, this seems to make sense, holding some things just to be available to people who are paying for the content as opposed to the free online stuff. But Susie adds, that said, I will still enjoy even partial versions of my New Yorker on my K1 via Caliber on occasions when the laptop is inconvenient, such as while traveling. So thanks so much for the Caliber tip. I expect it will be useful in other situations as well. Susie Burnett also left this question on the show notes page. One topic I continue to find confusing is how one should treat the K1 battery. Recharge early and often, let it run down, leave the K1 in sleep mode for hours, or turn it on and off. Any advice you may have will be appreciated. I ran this question by Stephen Windwalker, the pioneer Kindle Guide author and the publisher of the excellent new weekly newsletter, Kindle Nation. He replied, the Kindle One battery has been a weak link for the device in several ways, and my general experience on the two Kindle One units my son and I owned was that they could not be counted on to hold a charge up to the standards claimed by Amazon. That being said, I found that I tended to get the most consistent overall performance from my Kindle One when I plugged it in with the power adapter every night at bedtime. I know from my own personal experience and from conversations with Kindle support staff and other owners that letting the Kindle One battery run down all the way seems to be bad for the device. I also find it much more convenient, both with the Kindle One and Kindle Two, to leave the Kindle in sleep mode when I'm not using it, including when it is charging, so that it can receive the daily paper and any interstellar messages that Steve King's Kindle may want to relay to it during the night. If you don't get that reference, you need to buy Stephen King's Kindle book. Good advice, and I appreciate Steve's quick response to that question from Susie Burnett. A listener named Thorne left a message on the show notes page asking if we can trust Instapaper not to send spam to our Kindles. I fielded this one on Too Little Sleep, and I mistakenly forwarded the question to COVID Goyal, the creator of Caliber, who was my interview guest on last week's show. He indicated understandable confusion as to why I was asking him about a program he has nothing to do with, Instapaper, but then he graciously weighed in with this helpful comment. COVID wrote, in general terms, it would not be in Instapaper's interest to send spam to Kindle users, since doing so would quickly alienate their users and they need their users. If you meant, will Caliber send spam to your Kindle, then the answer is no. For one thing, when you give Caliber your email address, it doesn't share it with anybody, including me. It just stores the email address in its settings file on your computer. Caliber only sends what you tell it to send, and if at any time you want it to stop sending email to your Kindle, you can remove your email address from the preferences dialog. Doing so deletes the stored email from Caliber's settings. On a more general note, Caliber is a completely open source program, so if anybody has concerns about it, all they have to do is inspect the code to see exactly what it is doing or hire someone to inspect the code for them. Hope that helps, COVID. Dolores Martin, who specializes in succinct comments for the podcast, emailed me the following tip: and Caliber leads to library thing. I checked out librarything.com and found that it's a site for book lovers that helps you create a catalog of your books and to do it with others. So I'll have a link in the show notes, and thank you, Dolores. Dorothy Witter emailed, Len, I'm sure you're already on top of this, and she included a link to a post titled Beta Test of Modified Kindle 2 Fonts. The poster states, at last, someone has hacked the Kindle 2 to allow loading custom font replacements. I am currently one of the early beta testers of this software. It definitely isn't for the casual user, as misuse of the software can lead to a non-functional Kindle. However, as proof of concept, it shows us the type of display that our K2s are capable of. There are photos and details. I'll put a link in the show notes to this, but it's truly for the brave and the adventurous only among you. I hadn't seen this, so thanks to you, Dorothy, for passing it along. I love getting your comments, so please feel free. And if you'd like to leave an audio comment, you can do that by calling 206-666-2713. It's just like a regular phone message line, so you can leave a comment there and re-record it until you get it the way you want it. You can also email me at podchronicles@gmail.com or leave a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. If you'd like to be included in the Kindled Spirits email alert list, please drop me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. What I do is I send out to people on the list an email the moment that I've uploaded a new episode, as well as occasional alerts and questions related to late-breaking Kindle news items. Since we had such a great time at the first ever Kindle Chronicles meetup in Austin during South by Southwest, I'm happy to announce that the second meetup will be held in Colorado at 11 a.m. on Saturday, April 18th at the Starbucks just off I-25 at the Longmont exit. That's exit 240. And I'll have a link in the show notes to the location of the Starbucks. I had a chance to visit with Marcy McKenzie and her husband Don last weekend when I was up in Loveland, so they helped me think through the planning of this. Looking forward to seeing them again, along with several others who I've heard from already who've said that they plan to come. So please spread the word, and if you're within striking distance and can come, drop me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com so I'll know how many tables to commandeer when I get to the Starbucks a little earlier than that. And if you come, please do bring your Kindle so that we can have a group photograph and share tips and tricks and just have a good conversation and get to know each other and what's new in the world of the Kindle. For next week's interview, I will be speaking, as I said, with Chris Danielson, Director of Communications for the National Federation of the Blind. That's the organization which organized the reading rights protest this week. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA Promonet. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles, reminding you to read different. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.